Okay. Good evening. We begin this evening our discussion of Parshas Vayetze. And the discussion doesn't wait long in order to make itself apparent. Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva. He goes on the way to Haran. And the second pasuk states, Vayifga Bamakom. Vayifga Bamakom, he arrived at the place, or I think the official translation is he alighted at the place, which means he reached the place wherever that is. Vayalan Sham Kibo Hashemesh, and he slept there, the sun had set, with his famous stones around the head, stones that became a stone. But coming back to the opening words of this second pasuk, Vayifga Bamakom. There is a well-known explanation of Chazal on this word Vayifga Bamakom. We have given the Pshat translation, he arrived at the place. But the Gemara in the beginning of the fourth parak of Maseches Brachos explains that this is actually an expression of Tfilah. And Rashi cites it. Vayifga Bamakom, says Rashi, Rabbeinu Pirshu, Loshon Tfilah. Rabbeinu, our rabbis, Chazal, explained it as an expression of Tfilah. It's interesting if we try and be sensitive to the expression of Rashi, Rabbeinu Pirshu. Often Rashi, when he brings Rabbeinu, will say Rabbeinu Darshu. The rabbis expounded. Here they explained. Interesting if there's a difference in connotation with those two things. Either way, it's Loshon Tfilah. V'lamadnu shetiken Yaakov Arvis. And we learn from here that Yaakov instituted the evening prayer, Arvis. This is based on an opinion, one of two opinions in the Gemara there, that the three daily Tfilos were instituted originally by the Avos. Tfilos Avos Tiknum. They were instituted by the Avos, as the Gemara explains. Shachris is instituted by Avram, Vayashkem Avram Baboker, Al Hamakom Asher Omad Sham, Amida is an expression of Tfilah. Mincha was instituted by Yitzchak, Vayetze Yitzchak, Losuach Basode, and Sicha is an expression of Tfilah. And Arvis, in our Pasuk of Vayifga Bamakom, Pegia is an expression of Tfilah. That is the opinion there in the Gemara, which attaches a tefillah to each of the others. It's very interesting to note within the context of Parshat Shavua, of learning the Chumash, and Chumash with Rashi, as we often try to do, Rashi's inclusion, to what degree does he incorporate the above interpretations of Shachris, Mincha, and Maariv into his Perush on the Chumash? And the answer actually is different on all three occasions. With regards to the Pasuk in Vayera about Avram, Vayashkem Avram Baboker, Rashi does not mention the idea of Tfilah at all. He leaves it and does not reference the Gemara that Pasuk is about Avram not establishing Shachris and not even davening Shachris. It is absent from Rashi and Vayera. In Parshas Chayei Sara, commenting on the Yitzchak pasuk, Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basode, Rashi comments, Loshon Tfilah. It's an expression of Tfilah, and that's it. Meaning, Rashi does not take it a step further that Yitzchak instituted Mincha. He just explains that Yitzchak is davening at that time. In our pasuk, the third case, as we read just before, he brings the explanation that it's Tfilah and then continues that we learn that Yaakov instituted Arvis. So it's a very interesting progression, so to speak, of presence as we go through the Avos, going from no mention at all in Avram's case, mentioning Tfilah in Yitzhak's case, and mentioning Tfilah and the institution of that Tfilah in Yaakov's case. Either way, the third case made it into our pasuk, and this represents, as we say, the one side of the equation in the Gemara there, that the tfilos are the product of the avos, instituted by the avos. There is a second opinion, a disputing opinion there, in Brachos, and that is Tfilos Keneget Midim Tiknum. If you want to know where the three daily Tfilos come from, they come from the Korbanos, Shachris Mincha and Ma'ariv, parallel Korbanos times. Shachris corresponds to the morning Tamid, the morning daily offering. Mincha corresponds to the Tamid Shabbeinu Abayim, the afternoon offering. And Ma'ariv corresponds to the burning of the sacrificial parts and the fats, etc., on the Mizbeach, which would take place throughout the night. Those parts of the Korbanos that were brought that day. So there we have the two opinions, well known, where the Tfilos Avos Tiknum, where the Tfilos instituted by the Avos, or Tfilos Keneget Temidim Tiknum, do they correspond to Korbanos? A machlokas. We may be inclined to ask, or curious to find out, is there any ramifications of this machlokas? Does it make a difference to my shachris or my mincha or my ma'ariv as to whether they originally were instituted by the avos or they were instituted keneged the korbanos? What are the implications of this machlokas, if any? And it's an interesting shaila, because the Shmona Esrei is the same regardless of where it came from, seemingly. But some say that it does have ramifications for the following, actually, well-known question. The Gemara discusses with regards to Ma'ariv, and of course this is why we talk about it in Parshas Vayetze, specifically apropos of the Tefillah of Ma'ariv, whether Ma'ariv is what's known as Rishus or Chovah, discretionary or obligatory. Machlokas. There is no machlokas about Shachris and Mincha. They are both Chovah, absolute obligation. Ma'ariv, there are two opinions as to whether it is Rishus, discretionary, or Chovah, obligatory. Now, Tosfos are quick to point out that Rishus doesn't mean it's completely, you can just take it or leave it for no good reason. It means it is a lesser level if some other pressing mitzvah comes along, one would set Ma'ariv aside. But barring such circumstances, it certainly is a mitzvah. And of course, by this stage, it's a part and parcel of the daily of the daily tefillah cycle, but in its inception, at its root, it is a question as to whether Arvis is Rishus, whatever that means, or Chova. And this dispute actually became famous because this was the dispute that led to the deposition and setting aside of Rabbi Gamliel from the position of Nasi. Rabbi Gamliel was the head of the Sanhedrin, but this very question was raised in the Beis HaMedrash, and Rabbi Yeshua, his colleague Rabbi Yeshua, was inclined to say that Arvis is Rishus. Rabbi Gamliel said Chova, and it came to a bit of a head, and Rabbi Gamliel was very firm in his insistence that there should be no machlokas here. He had Rabbi Yeshua standing the whole day. The other rabbis took exception to this. They felt that it was too heavy-handed on Rabbi Gamliel's part. We always mention, apropos of this famous story, Rabbi Gamliel's behavior, it needs to be understood in the context that it is at a time after the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash where the central institution that people had related to as Judaism, namely the Beis HaMikdash, had been destroyed. All that is left, all quote-unquote that is left, is the Sanhedrin. It was emphatic at this transitional time, in the aftermath of the trauma of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, that people shouldn't think in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash there will be no Judaism. That's what the Romans thought. They thought that Judaism would be over when they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. They did not realize that it's not over because the Jewish people are defined by the Torah, not even by the building called the Beis HaMikdash. That's why anti-Torah teaching decrees actually increased after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Hanani ben Trajan, their Sarah Haruge Malchus was after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, in order to assert in no uncertain terms that the authority of the Sanhedrin has not changed at all, even though now it's in Yavne and it's not on the site of the Beis HaMikdash, so it was important that no dissent be brooked at that crucial stage. Nevertheless, without impugning the purity of intent on Rabbi Gamliel, it was still considered to be too much excessive on the part of his colleagues, and they took the stage of deposing him from the position of Nasi, which is a very interesting thing to consider, that it had never happened before, and how exactly did they know that it was able to happen now? It was a completely new idea, and they did it. And that's when they approached Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who famously said, "I have to ask my wife." She told him he didn't look like the type of person that the Sanhedrin would listen to, except soon enough, he began to look much older. Harei ani kevin shivim shana, as we say in the Pesach Haggadah. All of that stemmed from this, the machlokas that was the trigger for that whole episode, was this very machlokas of Tfilas Arvis, Rishus, or Chova. Either way, what way may we ask is at the root of the machlokas as to what Tfilas Arvis is about, whether Ma'ariv is discretionary, obligatory. No such debate or discussion exists with Shacharis or Mincha. Why are there two possibilities when it comes to Ma'ariv? One of the classic Acharonim, the Sefer Mishkanos Yaakov, authored by Rabbi Yaakov of Karlin, one of the two great disciples of Rabbi Chaim of Elozhin, suggests that the question as to whether Ma'ariv is Rishus or Chova depends on where the three tefillahs came from. It brings us back to that prior dispute. Did it come from the Avos or did it come from the Korbanos? This will be a practical ramification of that machlokas. After all, if we take the approach that the three daily tefillahs come from the Avos, so Shacharis comes from Avram, Mincha from Yitzhak, Ma'ariv from Yaakov. Yaakov is no less an Av than Avram and Yitzhak. Yaakov is Bechir Sheba Avos, and therefore his tefillah should be no different in standing than any of the other two. And therefore the opinion that tefillos, that Ma'ariv is Chova like the other two, is because it is rooted in the understanding that tefillos come from the Avos, and all three Avos are equal. So all three tefillos are equally binding, equally obligatory. Whereas the opinion that a Ma'ariv is Rishus, so where does that come from? Something of a lesser severity than Shacharis and Mincha, that draws or derives from the opinion that the tefillos correspond to the korbanos. Because the morning and afternoon were korbanos that have to be brought. The Tomid Shel Shachar is brought in the morning. Tomid Shel Bein Arbaim in the afternoon. The two daily tmidim. When it comes to the evening, evening is taking care of anything that hasn't been fully put on the Mizbeach during the day. Is the night is available for that. But in the same way that if everything was put on the Mizbeach at day, nothing happens at night. So it has a different relationship. It's not a fixed obligation to do anything with the Mizbeach at night. And that expresses itself in the tefillah that corresponds to the nighttime korban activity, which was itself rishus of sorts, that tefillas arvis is rishus. Very interesting to find reverberations of this rather esoteric sounding machlokas. Do the three tefillas come from the avos, from the korbanos? It finds expression in tefillas arvis. And this indeed would seem to be borne out by a comment of Rashi, although disputed by Tosfos, both of them not in Maseches Brachos, but in Maseches Shabbos, Daf Tes. For Rashi, when he talks about Tfilas Arvis Rishus there, explains, Arvis is Rishus because it corresponds to the burning of the Korbanos on the evening, which didn't always happen. So we see that support for the Mishkanos Yaakov. Rashi has drawn a straight line from the Korbanos to explain why Tfilas Arvis is Rishus. Tosfos, however, as can sometimes happen, disagrees with Rashi. And we see that when Tosas are making the case that Ma'ariv, even though it's Rishus, it doesn't mean it's just, you can do whatever you want. It's still a mitzvah, says Tosas. After all, consider, Yaakov instituted Tfilas Arvis. One wouldn't just not do it for no reason. So we see that unlike Rashi, even within the view that the Avos instituted the Korbanos, the Arvis Institute, the Tfilos, there's still room to see that Arvis is different and Arvis is Rishus. The question is why? If indeed Arvis would be Rishus, even if the three Tfilos come from the Avos, why is Yaakov's prayer different than that of Avram and Yitzhak? And there's many, many answers to this question, but one classic answer, one of four actually, which is given by the Mabit, Rabbi Moshe Mitrani, In his Sefer Beis Elokim, he was a colleague of Rabbi Yosef Karo in Tzfat on the Beis Din. And his Sefer Beis Elokim, he explains that if you know the background to this prayer of Yaakov, it's a little different than the others. Chazal tell us that Yaakov actually passed by the place of the Beis HaMikdash, and then he stopped himself and said, how can it be? Rashi cites this. Can it be that I passed by a place where my forefathers davened and I didn't daven, so he went back there to daven? What that means is this tefillah, which is the institutional tefillah of Ma'ariv, it actually lacked, we could say, something of the intentionality that the Shachris and the Mincha did. Avram gets up in the morning to daven Shachris. Yitzchak goes out to the field to daven Mincha. Yaakov, as an ad hoc thought, I pass by, I should go back. It had a somewhat more spontaneous nature to it, and says the Beis Elokim, that finds expression in the tefillah that was instituted, also something of a less than full obligation. But of course, as Tosfos reminds us the whole time, and certainly by this stage, part of the prayer, day. So these are some very interesting questions that are generated by Chazal's explanation of Vayivka Bamakom as Tfilas Arvis. Is it the same as the others or not? If not, why not? And potentially relating to the question as to where the three daily Tfilas come from in the first place. Well, from the second Pasuk in the Parsha, we move to the third. And this is Yaakov's famous dream. Vayachalom. V'hinei sulam mutzav arza. In his dream, there's a ladder. It's rooted on the ground. V'roshe magia shemaima. Its head reaches the heavens. V'hinei malachei elokim olim v'yordim bo. Angels going up and down. And as we always note, this, a dream, is not the only dream in the Torah. But it is the only dream whose interpretation is not given in the Torah. Which is very interesting. If you think of all the other dreams that we're familiar with, Paro's dreams are interpreted by Yosef, the butlers and the bakers interpreted by Yosef, Yosef's own dreams interpreted by the brothers and Yaakov. But Yaakov's dream, we have the dream and the Torah doesn't say what it means, which gives a lot of scope to the Mefarshim, etc., to explain exactly what the meaning of the dream is and what is its meaning as Yaakov is having this dream right now, at this moment. How does this relate to where he is? That is the question. And as Mefarshim point out, this dream does relate to where Yaakov is, where he's coming from, and where he is headed to. Because Yaakov actually is in transition now. He's on his way to get married, to set up a family. That's what's waiting for him in Lavan's house. That's where he's headed to. And where is he coming from? He's coming from the yeshiva of Aver. As we know, those 14 years that he doesn't leave straight away. He prepares himself in the yeshiva of Aver. We normally talk about the yeshiva of Shem ve'Aver. Firstly, they were two yeshivas. And secondly, Shem was no longer alive at this stage. That's why Rashi talks about the yeshiva of Aver. What is the significance of these two enterprises with Yaakov? The years in the yeshiva first, and now the years that he's headed to, they represent two very different spheres of endeavor. His Torah learning is purely spiritual in nature. Setting up a family is a very physical thing. Needless to say, the goal is to connect the two. The goal is that when he gets married and he works for Lavan and he sets up a family and has children, that is not a purely physical endeavor with no higher meaning. To that end, Yaakov fortifies himself with his years of learning beforehand, and now he is at the transitional stage, moving more into the physical world, but the goal is to fuse the two. And the place where we find him in between these two endeavors is the place of the Beis HaMikdash. And that is exactly the role of the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is a physical building on earth whose goal is to introduce Kedusha into the world. It's the Mikdash. Ve'asuli Mikdash, V'shachanti Besocham. And therefore, what the Beis HaMikdash represents to the world of bringing in Kedusha from a higher realm to this world is exactly the point that Yaakov is at. Having filled himself up with Kedusha in the Beis HaMikdash of Aver, in the Yeshiva of Aver, he is now going to move all of that to bridge and carry that into his physical pursuits. And to that end, he has his dream. And what is in his dream? A ladder. Rooted on earth, the head reaches the heavens, and the ladder connects the two. For that is what the Beis HaMikdash is. The Beis HaMikdash is the ladder that connects the higher spiritual realm to the lower physical realm. So in terms of geography, Yaakov is at the place where, in terms of history, he is also at that place, at the meeting point between physical endeavors and spiritual attainments, with the one elevating the other. So this is, we're beginning to appreciate the significance of the timing of this dream of the ladder and of the location. It's a message for Yaakov in terms of what Yaakov himself is doing. And actually, there is one stage further here. And this is discussed by someone who you have not mentioned in a while, Rav Uri Jungreis Shlita, one of the great Talmidei Chachamim of Yerushalayim, in his Sefer Uri V'Yishi. And he takes things to a completely different level, as they say. He begins by referring us to a Gemara in Maseches Ksubas, Daf Hei, which compares and contrasts, it's a very interesting comparison, the creation of heaven and earth and the creation of the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara says, the creation of the Beis HaMikdash is greater than the creation of heaven and earth. Why? Because, says the Gemara, heaven and earth were created with one hand. The Beis HaMikdash was created with two hands. Where do we see that heaven and earth are created with one hand? It quotes a pasuk in Mishle. Hashem says, Af yadi osta eretz, vimini tipcha shamayim. Yosta eretz established the earth, and my right hand developed the heavens. So you see, heavens and earth, one hand. Yadi, yamini. Contrast that with the Beis HaMikdash, says the Gemara, which is created with two hands. As the Pasuk says, Mikdash Hashem Konanu Yodecha, your hands have established the Beis HaMikdash. So to summarize, what have we noted? Heaven and earth are created with one hand. The Beis HaMikdash is created with two hands, and two are better than one. So the Beis HaMikdash is a greater creation than heaven and earth. So says the Gemara. Now, before we even try and find out what that means, Mefarshim raised a very interesting question. The Gemara says that the heaven and earth were created with one hand, but the Pasuk that it quotes mentions two hands. The Pasuk says, Af yadi yosda eretz, my hand established earth. Vimini, and my right hand, developed the heavens. Whenever the term yad is used in contradistinction to yamin, yamin is the right hand, yad by default is the left hand. Which means the very verse that we cited to express the idea that heavens and earth are created with one hand, in the end, has two hands in it. So what's the difference between those two hands and the two hands in the Beis HaMikdash? But the Mefarshim explain. Heaven is created with the right hand, earth with the left hand. One and one is two, but never the twain shall meet. They remain two distinct endeavors and enterprises. And that's why we say the Beis HaMikdash is greater. Because the Beis HaMikdash is created by a pair of hands, by the hands working in tandem. If ever there was an example of the expression of the idea that the whole is more than the sum of the parts, it's a pair of hands as opposed to one hand and another hand. As we know, in our own experience. So now, what have we established? that heaven and earth are created with two hands separately. One hand heaven, one hand earth. The Beis HaMikdash is created by two hands together. What is the meaning of all of this? The Maharal explains in the Gur Aryeh that the idea, of course, Yamin always is that which is more significant and more primary. That is why the heavens are created with the right hand. V'imini tibcha shamayim. Because heaven is the ikar. Spiritual content is primary. And therefore the right hand represents spiritual matters. The right hand creates heaven. The left hand is secondary. And therefore the left hand creates earth, whose physical pursuits are secondary to spiritual pursuits. And the two realms remain distinct. The realm of the right hand is in the heavens and the realm of the left hand is on earth until the Beis HaMikdash comes and joins the hands together. That is to say, it infuses, it takes the right hand, which representing the spiritual, and joins it together with the physical, to give the physical world meaning, higher content, and higher status. That is what we mean when we say Beis HaMikdash is created by a pair of hands. It brings the two realms together. That's the ladder. That's the ladder of Yaakov, connecting the two realms. And indeed, with this in mind, the Mefarshim draw our attention to a famous statement of the Gemara. It's a bit of a word chain, as we'll see. The Gemara in Maseches Menachos, in Daf Nun Gimel, which says, concerning the Beis HaMikdash, if you've ever heard it, you can't forget it. Let the Yedid, son of a Yedid, come. A Yedid is a friend. Let the friend, Yedid, the son of a friend, come and build a place of Yedidus for the Yedid in the place of the Yedid. Who are all these Yedidim? The Gemara explains. The Yedid, it's talking about the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And the first Yedid in the sentence is Shlomo HaMelech, one of whose names was Yedidya. So he is the Yedid, Yedidya, friend of Hashem. He is the son of a Yedid, that's Avram Avinu. The Gemara quotes a pasuk with regards to Avram, Mali Yedidi Bevesi. And he creates a place of Yedidus. As the pasuk says in Tehillim, my Yedidus Mishkano Secha, how much friendship there is in the Mishkan. For Hashem, who's called the Yedid, that's Yeshaya's song in Perek Hey, Ashirana Li Didi. In the location of a Yedid, where is the Beis HaMikdash? It's on the location of Binyamin, who is called Yedid Hashem. Yedid Hashem, Yishkon Lavetach Alav. So that is the deciphering of all the Yedidim. One thing is quite clear by the time we're finished with that section of the Gemara. The concept of Yedidus, of friendship, runs through the Beis HaMikdash. What is befriending what? Why is the Beis HaMikdash called a place of friendship? Because it's a place of joining together the spiritual realm and the physical realm. It is the ultimate fusion. Indeed, as Mefarshim point out, the word Yedid itself, which is a special type of friendship, actually is made up of two words, yad, yad. Yedid is when one yad connects with the other yad, and then you have yedid. And in terms of our discussion, the two hands that are being joined together by the Beis HaMikdash are the right hand of heaven and the left hand of earth. So this whole coming together is encapsulated within the word Yedid. So say the Mefarshim. And then Rav Jungreis adds a wonderful PS. This is all really forming with Yaakov. Yaakov's experiencing in the eras of his life this very idea of joining together the right hand of spirituality with the left hand of physicality. That's why he has this dream on the place of the Beis HaMikdash, joining the two yads. And where do we see this expressed in Yaakov himself? Yaakov has just spent some years in the yeshiva of Eiver. How many years has he been in the yeshiva of Eiver for? 14, which is the value of Yad. And he's headed to set up his house. How long will that take him? 14 years. 7 for Leah, 7 for Rachel. So in other words, Yaakov is at the meeting point, the joining point, as he transitions from the first Yad, his 14 years in Aver, to the second Yad, which is his 14 years in the house of Lavan. So that's his own bringing together as a Yidid in the place of Yididus, as he has this dream of the ladder connecting the two realms. So there's most profound symbolism in terms of what he sees, when he sees it, where he sees it, and what it, how it is expressed in his own life, and what the message is for all of his descendants. Wonderful comments from Rav Jungreis in the Sefer Ari V'Yishi. Well, moving on, just a little bit further into the Parsha, as we know, he comes to Charan, and he wants to find Lavan's house. So this is now discussed in Perek Kaf Tes, Pasuk Dalet. The earlier Psukim describe the scene. There's lots of shepherds there. There's flocks. There's a well, stone on the well. And Yaakov engages them in conversation. Pasuk Dalet, Vayomer lehem Yaakov, Achai, my brothers, me'ayin atem. Where are you from? Vayomer mecharan anachnu, we're from Charan. Okay. And then he asked them, do you know Lavan? And they say, Lavan, and how is he doing? Well, here's his daughter, Rachel, and so on. Some Mefarshim are most interested and intrigued by the way Yaakov opens his conversation with the shepherds. Achai, my brothers. How are they his brothers? What does he mean by that? He doesn't know them. He's not connected to them. But he calls them Achai. What is contained within that opening? So interestingly, this matter is addressed by the Netziv in his Perush HaMikdavar. And he says, this is a short few words, Lamad Lishono, Yaakov accustomed his tongue, Lidaber Lashon Ahava V'Reyus. He speaks in a way which is positive, full of love and friendship. That's how he speaks. Al Kain Kara Laroim. That's why he called these shepherds Shelo Hikiram Me'olam. He never met them before. Achai. He calls them his brothers. Yaakov feels that the way that one should speak is overwhelmingly positive and connective. And even if you don't know the person, call them your brother to foster positivity and good feeling. It's one word really speaks volumes in terms of an approach. The message ultimately is the same, but how different that message comes across when a person bespeaks that attitude. We've mentioned in the past that Rabbi Yosef Chaim of Baghdad, the Ben Ish Chai, in his commentary Ben Yoyada to Maseches Bava Kama and Daf Lamed, there the Gemara says that if a person wants to be a chosid, he should learn Mili de Avos, matters of Avos. And the generally accepted understanding, he says, should learn Pirkei Avos, which of course one should. That's the way to become a chosid. But the Ben Yehoyada, Rabbi Yosef Chaim, has a wonderful explanation. Mili de Avos literally means the words of the Avos. If you want to be a chosid, look at how the Avos speak. Study literally Mili de Avos, the words of the Avos. And then a person knows how to carry themselves, how to communicate, how to deport themselves, and how to get their messages across. So this is the Netziv's understanding. It's a general approach of Yaakov. If you see someone, all things being equal, call them your brother. Nothing bad will come from it. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has a very different understanding. One could say much more localized to this specific occasion. If you wish to know, says Rabbi Yaakov, why it is that Yaakov opens his words with the words Achai, is because initially he asks them where they're from, and do they know Lavan, and how is Lavan doing? But then in Pasuk Zion, he has another message for them. Vayomer, says Yaakov, Hein odayom gadol, and I'm very curious. It's still, the day is still long. Lo eisia sefer mikneh. It's not yet time to bring the flock in. Why is no one watering the flock? Hashku hatzon. Ulechu ru'u. You should water the flock. You should tend to your sheep. Now they explained to him they can't do that because the stone is there and they need all of them there in order to push it off and everything else ensues from there. But this is very interesting. Perhaps somewhat unexpected. In addition to asking to then know Lavan and basically making his way to Lavan's house or to speak to Rachel, he gives them, one could say, words of Musar. And that's how Rashi explains it, as if to say, you don't mind me pointing it out, but the day is long and no one's doing anything here. So are you workers? Do you work for someone? Because there's work to be done. It's quite a thing to say. Says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Yaakov Avinu's words here, for whatever reason he says them, one could have thought, well, it has nothing to do with him, but for whatever reason he judges to say them, are words of tochacha, they're words of rebuke. If Yaakov is about to give them words of rebuke, he needs to call them his brothers beforehand. That's why he says achai. Why? Because if you look in the Rambam, in Hilchos Deos, where he discusses how rebuke is to be administered, the Rambam emphasizes that the person you need to make known to whoever you're giving rebuke, and rebuke is not a simple matter. To correct someone, if they're doing something that maybe they could be doing something better, there's a dynamic there. It's not a simple thing. Not everyone likes to be rebuked, to be told what to do by other people. We're mindful, Lahavdil, but Churchill said, I'm always willing to learn. I'm not always willing to be taught. As soon as there's another person telling you that which you don't know or which you should know, and he's not famous for his good middos, but at least Zachor Latov for his honesty in recognizing his bad middos. There's a lesson there as well. Back to Kodesh, the Rambam says that the person needs to know you have their well-being at mind. Because otherwise the message won't come across. There's friction. And if they feel a confrontation, there'll be resistance. So the only way tochacha will ever work is if they feel that you're on the same side. And for many people, that's a great disappointment in the world of tochacha, because apparently the goal is not to make them feel completely worthless. That needs some readjustment. And therefore, says Rabbi Yaakov, Yaakov Avinu says, Achai, we're brothers. What I'm about to say, I'm saying in friendship. And that's the way it's done. That's the way it's done. The art of Tochacha. Where we're mindful, just on this Nekuda, before we move on, the Shalah HaKadosh famously quotes the Pasuk in Mishlei. Who should you give rebuke to? Says the Pasuk in Mishlei, Al Tochach Leitz. Don't give rebuke to a Leitz, to a scoffer. Pen Yisnoeka. What good will come of it? He'll just hate you. So no good will come of it. Hocheach lachacham, give tochacha to a wise person, v'yeavecha, and he'll love you for it. So says the pasuk in Mishlei. Now it seems like the moral of the story is you can only give tochacha to a certain group of people; the others don't bother. Needless to say, it's the late sim who probably need tochacha more, but apparently they're a lost cause. So nothing good will come of it. Stick to the ones who are more or less okay anyway, because they're the only ones that you have a chance with. That's what the Pasuk seems to be saying on a straightforward level. But the Shalah HaKadosh says no. The Shalah says both parts of the Pasuk are talking about the same person. How different is the outcome depending on your approach to that person? If you see someone who's doing something wrong and you immediately condemn them, elates, and you excoriate them. So you dismiss them. Nothing good will come of it. Says Shlomo HaMelech, the very same person. Do not address him as a late. Address him as a chacham. You never know what might happen. If someone shows him some respect, if someone is there not just to to dismiss him and to reject him, but to help him in a way, as from wise man to wise man, many an attentive ear has responded to words towards a wise man. So it's such a wonderful parish, and one can see how true the words ring. The very same person, if you approach him as a leitz, don't expect a good outcome. Approach the same person as a chacham, v'yevecha. You'll see wonders will happen. So these are the two very interesting approaches for the Netziv. One could say more general, the approach of Yaakov in using the word achai, and for Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, somewhat more germane to the tochacha topic that was at hand in that conversation. From there, let us move on to the Shvatim. And as we know, there's much to say. 11 of the 12 Shvatim are born in our parsha. Binyamin will be in next week's parsha. And as the Psukim relate, Leah has four children. And then in the beginning of Perek Lamed, Rachel is jealous of Leah. As Rashi says, she's jealous of her good deeds. Leah must be doing something right. Rachel needs to take action. Mefarshim raises an interesting question. If we understand the Psukim to be in sequence, it sounds like Leah had four children before Rachel reacted, which is very interesting. Why did it take four sons already from son number one or two or three? So that's an interesting, just to follow the Parsha sequentially. But she then comes to Yaakov in a dire situation and says he should give her children. The way that things develop from there, at the first step, is in Pasuk Gimel. Vatomer, says Rachel, this is in Perek Lamed, Pasuk Gimel. Hine amasi bilha, here is my handmaiden Bilha, Boelea, so marry her. V'teled al birkai, let her have a child, I will raise the child. That's what it means for someone to be born on someone's knees. It means that person raises them. Like we find in the end of Parshas Vayechi, that Yosef's grandchildren and great-grandchildren, Yuldu al birkei Yosef, they were brought up by Yosef. So Rachel says, I'll bring up the child, v'ibone gam anochi mimena, and then I hope that I will also then be built in the sense that then perhaps I will also have children. And Bilha indeed conceives, and she has a child. And Rachel calls the child Dan, in Pasuk Vav, V'tomer Rachel danani Elokim, Hashem judged me, v'gam shema b'koli, but also listened to my voice, v'itini bein, and gave me a child. Aken kar'ah shemo Dan. So this is a very interesting stage in the events of the Parsha. Because what we see before us is effectively the bridge between the children of Leah and the beginnings of the children of Rachel. Dan, this son, he is the first to enter in on Rachel's side of things, straight after Leah has her fourth child, Yehuda. And just as it was in terms of their birth, that Yehuda, who will carry with him the Malchus and all of that, was followed by Dan, opening for Rachel. What then emerges, they're joined chronologically in terms of their birth. They're joined now causationally in terms of their birth, and they remain linked. These two tribes, Yehuda from Leah and Dan from Rachel, and they will be linked in many, many ways throughout history. And this matter is discussed by Reb Leib Mintzberg in the Sefer Ben Melech. And he begins by drawing our attention to the fact that there is a very significant phrase that is only used with these two Shvatim. We're familiar with it from Yehuda, from the Brachos of Yehuda, but it also features in the Brachos of Dan later on. And that is the title Gur Aryeh. In Parshas Vayechi, Yehuda is called Gur Aryeh, with all the strength and power that that represents. Gur Aryeh Yehuda, says Yaakov. And in the Brachos of Yaakov, that title is unique to Yehuda, Gur Aryeh Yehuda. But later on, in Parshas Vezos HaBracha, when Moshe gives the brachos, he will use the very same term and apply it to Dan. Ule Dan Amar, Dan Gur Aryeh. So these are the two lions of the Jewish people. That very specific and meaning-laden phrase of Gur Aryeh is shared by both of them. It's very interesting. That means they have a lot of qualities in common. And indeed, in terms of strength and power, the two outstandingly powerful personalities in terms of the enemies of the Jewish people came from these two tribes. You have Shimshon HaGibor, who single-handedly saves everyone with the whole story that goes there. Shimshon is from the tribe of Dan. And then subsequently, of course, on a more broader scale, in terms of armies, David HaMelech wages war. And they both wage war against the ubiquitous bane called the Plishtim. Shimshon wages war against the Plishtim. David wages war against the Plishtim. David is from Yehuda. And in fact, according to Rashi, Yaakov himself in his brachos associates Shimshon with David HaMelech. Because the bracha for Shimshon is Dan Yadin Amo. Dan will exact vengeance for his nation. Ke'achad Shiftei Yisrael, like the primary of the tribes of Israel. Rashi says, that's David HaMelech from Yehuda. Here is Yaakov directly associating the judge of Dan with the leader of Yehuda, who will be David HaMelech. And as we see, they both are very active in that way, outstandingly so, Shimshon and David, Dan and Yehuda. Not only are they both active in vis-a-vis the enemies of the Jewish people generally, we find further that they both collaborated against one of the arch enemies of the Jewish people, namely Esav. The demise of Esav is well known to us from the Gemara, the account, which is in Maseches Sota and Daf Yud Gimel. There, I think we mentioned it even last week or 2 weeks ago, it's well known that it was the Levaya of Yaakov, and Esav turns up and he demands that he enter the Maror Samach Peila, and he holds up the Levaya and it's back and forth and they try and get documentation and so on. Hushim, who is deaf and hasn't been following the proceedings, he just sees that Esav, who I don't know if he knows Esav from before, but he's holding things up, and for him the that's unacceptable. And the way the Gemara describes it, he took a stick and he whacked Esav on the head, and that was the end of it. So Esav is killed by Hushim, the son of Dan. That is how it's described in the Gemara, in Maseches Sota, Daf Yud Gimel. However, there is a Yerushalmi in Maseches Ksubas, in the first parak. And there the Yerushalmi ascribes the death, or attributes, the death of Esav to Yehuda. Yodcha be'oref oyvecha, your hand, is at the neck of your enemy, says the Yerushalmi, that's Esav. And this question is raised by Tosfos, because one of Tosfos' job is to make Shalom in all of Shas. So if you have the Gemara in Sota says that it was Hushim, the son of Dan, that killed Esav. And then the Yerushalmi in Ksuba says that it was Yehuda that killed Esav. How can both of these work together? Says Tosfos in Maseches Gittin, Daf Nun Hei. Presumably, what it means is that Hushim administered the first blow, and Yehuda then presented the Makkeh Patish. And he's the one that delivered the final blow, which is amazing because once again, we see these two in collaboration against Esav, who represents so much of what is antagonistic and enmity towards the Jewish people, that it begins with Dan and ends with Yehuda. Moving forward in the Chumash, in Chumash Bamidbar, we know that the tribes were divided into machanos, into camps, and each machaneh had a Rosh Machaneh. There's four camps of three tribes each. And they, as they travel forward, so who travels first? Yehuda. Degel Machaneh Yehuda. So they go first. And then you have Degel Machaneh Reuven, Degel Machaneh Ephraim. And who brings up the rear? Degel Machaneh Dan. Once again, the two most sensitive positions as the Jewish people are moving forward, the two most protective positions are the front and the rear. And once again, they're covered by this collaboration of Yehuda and Dan, respectively. So that's the Jewish people encamped in the Midbar. Further collaboration. The very first version of the Beis HaMikdash is the Mishkan, of course. And at the helm of overseeing the construction of the Beis HaMikdash are two individuals, who we know as Bezalel and Ahaliyav. And where are they from? Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur is from the tribe of Yehuda. Ahaliyav is from the tribe of Dan. And once again, the Mikdash, or the Mishkan, which is the central enterprise of the Jewish people, it is spearheaded by a partnership with Yehuda and Dan, Bezalel and Ahaliyav. And moreover, says the Medrash Tanchuma in Parshas Kisisa, it draws this partnership and tracks it even in the future. For the Beis HaMikdash likewise was the product of a similar collaboration. How so, and where do we see this? Well, the first Beis HaMikdash, we know, was built by Shlomo. Okay, it's the first Beis HaMikdash in Sefer Melachim Aleph. But who was his chief architect? Someone called Chiram. This is in Perek Zion of Melachim Aleph. And where is Chiram from? So interestingly, as the Medrash points out, if you look and say from Melachim, it says that Chiram is from Sheva Naphtali. In Divrei HaYomim, it tells us that Chiram's mother is from Dan. It makes a point of mentioning that. And this maternal lineage, says the Medrash Tanchuma, is a reprisal of the partnership that began between Yehuda and Dan, represented by Bezalel and Ahaliyav in the making of the Mishkan, now comes back in the form of Shlomo and Chiram, again Yehuda and Dan in the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And all of this, says Rav Mintzberg, as we said, so many emanations and illustrations and expressions of this partnership, and it all comes back to how they were born, that Dan is begat almost like by the birth of Yehuda in that way. And thus they remain joined in all of these ventures. And the matter goes from the past to the future. There is a sefer from one of the Rishonim called Tzror Hamor. This was written by someone called Rabbi Avram Seba. He was actually thrown out of Spain. And in fact, his ksavim were buried. He had to leave them buried. I think he was able to take them from Spain, but they settled in Portugal, and then he was expelled from there as well. And at that point, it was dangerous to have any Jewish identifying objects. He buried them, and he was never able to go back for them. He had to rewrite the Sefer from memory. And the Tzror Hamor says, with regards to the Mashiach, whose arrival we anticipate, and we say Mashiach ben David, based on his understanding of the Psukim or perhaps a Masorah that he had. Likewise, with regards to the future, says the Tzror Hamor, Mashiach in the future will be descended on his father's side from Yehuda, but on his mother's side from Dan, as that partnership will reach its final expression and realization. We hope to be able to ask Mashiach soon exactly where who he's descended from in his father's side and his mother's side. That's a question that we'd like to settle personally. But that's a question of doing what we can to bring the Golos to a close. And with this, we end our remarks by going back to where we started at the beginning of this evening, that we say Tfilas Arvis is Rishus. Tfilas Arvis has an element of, it's kind of, it sounds like, it's up to you. But what does that mean? The Mabit, in his fourth explanation, in the Sefer Beis Elokim, explains, the three tfilos correspond to the three exiles of the Jewish people. The exile in Egypt, which is our first and foremost exile. Then the exile in Bavel. And then the exile after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Avram's tefillah corresponds to Egypt, Yitzchak to Bavel, and Yaakov to Rome and beyond. And it's for that reason, says the Mabit, that the first two tefillahs are chova, because the exile had a certain set amount that could not go below. The exile in Egypt is 400 years, however you compute it and however you calculate it. But whatever it is, it's 400 years. So it will definitely be that time. The exile in Bavel, 70 years. All of this was known by Nevuah. And therefore the tefillahs that correspond to those times are set tefillahs. But the tefillah of Arvis corresponds to the final galus. How long does the final galus need to last? It doesn't need to last any day longer than it could be ended. As we say, Hayom im bekolo tishmo'o. Says the Beis Elokim, V'lakach amru tefillas Arvis rishus. That is why they said that the Ma'ariv, it's up to you. Again, as a mitzvah, we treat it no differently than Shachar Semincha. But it has an element that we should be aware of in terms of its inception. Why was Arvis originally or in some way up to us? Kizos ha-ge'ula she'anu mekavim bo. Because the very redemption that this Tfilas Arvis is about, the redemption from the third exile, he rishus biyadeinu. That's up to us. Bechol yom, every day, in bekolo sishmo. So practically, the idea that Ma'ariv is rishus, does that express itself? I don't think in any practical way for us. But thematically, the message of Tfilas Arvis Rishus is a nightly reminder to the Jewish people that this can be the last prayer that's offered in exile, because this third exile can end at any time. Hayom kol hashmo, it's Rishus in the sense that it's up to you to bring about the fruition of what this prayer is about, and that's something that we hope will happen soon and in the best way, with Besaros Tovas for all and Yeshuas v'Nechamos B'Karov. All the best.